Welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, joined by Josh Gio. We're going to talk news in professional wrestling, and there's so much to get into there's major shows going on with the big companies, the AEW and Fighter Fest. They're week one there. WWE's in week one of the Great American Bash. We're going to start with good Impact Wrestling and news with, well, I guess the now former world champion Tessa Blanchard. And Tessa Blanchard basically walking out on the company before losing the belt and now has interest. WWE has already expressed interest, I think, from behind the scenes we're being told. AEW would have obvious interest in her as well.
Yeah.
Tessa Blanchard, Josh, what do you think about – she's got to be the hottest free agent in wrestling right now.
You would think so. You would think so. There's not a whole lot of landing spots for her right now. So I think that's another factor into it. The WWE, there's so many legacy talents there, and WWE really does enjoy a legacy talent. And she's great. She's great in the ring. She's great at promos. She gets heat, and she gets people's attention. We mentioned this in text prior to the show. I think it's a win-win for both organizations. Parties, essentially, Tessa Blanchard and Impact Wrestling. You had a champion who was dead in the water, was not participating with your company. She was hanging out in Cucan, Mexico, from what I can understand. That's where she has been for the duration of quarantine. And she was kind of in a weird contract situation. It was kind of hard to tell whether or not she was actually part of the full-time staff at Impact, that kind of thing. And Impact Women's, you know, I think Impact has a great women's division. They have some bruisers in that division. They have some great high flyers in that division. But, you know, it's Impact. And if you're not really searching for it, you're not going to find it. That's kind of where they're at. Yeah. They're just like a step above, you know, Major League Wrestling and Ring of Honor right now is kind of where they're at. So for her, if she lands in WWE, I think it's the perfect spot. Do a stint in NXT. And that's probably, I think, the best thing for her. Maybe have a feud or a program with Rhea Ripley on her way up to, you know, the main roster or what have you. But anyways, that's my take on it. We've talked about this a little bit. I want to hear kind of what you have to say about Tessa Blanchard and her Impact stint, especially the past year of that, and maybe what this transition looks like to you.
Yeah, Impact put the men's heavyweight title. I mean, you know, effectively making an intergender title. She was the first major, if you want to say, I'll call Impact a major company, first major company, women's champion to become a men's champion. It's interesting that Impact would do, I mean, she's a talent deserving of that recognition. I mean, she is that good. But to do that with someone that you didn't have locked up long term is interesting in my way of thinking. You know, unless they just put the belt on her and thinking that would keep her there longer for some reason, because, you know, now you've made this like epochal move. Wow, we put the strap on a woman.
Epochal.
Earth moving. You know, this was an industry changing kind of move. I mean, we talked about this a few minutes ago before we hit record. This would be like Charlotte Flair, you know, beating Braun Strowman to a degree. You know, I mean, that's because when she won the match, and when she didn't win this, like, you know, when David Arquette won the WCW title in a tag team match, you know, he didn't even pin the champion, and they gave David Arquette, the actor, the title. She won a gauntlet match that included Moose, that included Rich Swann, that included Brian. And she pinned Brian Cage to win the thing, straight up. She didn't back her way into this. They put her over more than you put over anybody to win a title.
It's not possible, man. It'd be like, it really would be like, I don't know, man, like one of the the Lucha Libre guys coming in and like going over on Braun Strowman for the heavyweight title, or Drew McIntyre.
Drake Maverick going over Braun Strowman for the heavyweight title. I mean, and
that's actually
because I think Tessa's bigger than Drake Maverick.
She is.
So
he's a small guy.
Pinned Brian Cage straight up. Like, he didn't get injured. He didn't have a knee injury, or he didn't hit his head on a ring post or get attacked from the outside. Straight up beat Brian Cage to win at the end of that gauntlet match and win the title. So you put her over more than you've ever put over anybody to make your champion, and she wasn't committed long term. And so that really devalues, in my mind, Impact to a degree. Now, yes, they've been putting shows lately. I've really liked the direction they've been going lately, but this isn't good for them. But yeah, in the end, if your champion's not going to work with you, you know, I wonder about what this does for her. Now, of course, she's a hot free agent, and AEW would be lucky to get her. You talked about the WWE scenario. If she were to go to AEW, and there is at least a thought that could be a possibility, if only because her last name is Blanchard, and there's a guy named Blanchard that is working there in a prominent role right now.
Well, that's her dad. That's legit.
Which would be her father, right, Tessa? Yeah. And Tully. So she would go there, and she would be the division. They would hand her the keys and say, take off. Take it. It's yours. But that said, you do have to wonder about – she didn't do business the right way here. And you have to wonder if you're WWE or AEW, if you say, all right, young lady, you are talented beyond talented, but there is a way of doing business that we expect you to do when you get here. And we did not like the left Impact. You cannot do that to us when you get here.
Yeah, she has a reputation of being an asshole.
Right.
That's like for no, like, not just to be extremely blunt. She is known for being very difficult to work with behind the scenes. We'll call her matches, we'll say, hey, I'll show up and I'll wrestle somebody, and then last minute she's like, I'm not wrestling that person. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this spot. I'm not doing that. I'm not letting go over. She's like, I'm going to write the match. She's actually known for trying to actually write matches before she'll actually, you know, get in the ring. And it's like, she is one of those people that really just wants to go over at every single opportunity. I think she would be humbled to work at any one of the, I think that would have to be part of the process. I don't think going to AEW would be good for AEW's women's division. For them, if they're thinking about this, I don't think they would be smart to have her long term. Maybe for a few matches, but not long term. I don't think she's a good fit for that company at their infancy, especially as undeveloped as the women's division is in AEW right now. You've got a few stars, but you don't have a lot. And if you got somebody coming in with the legend of John Henry, nah. Mm-mm, not going to work. The best fit for her is NXT. It really is. And she might not think that, but that's the best place for her. And for her to just say, hey, I'm going to go the WWE route, and I'm going to go under Triple H's wing. I'm going to go under, you know, who are some of the other coaches? Mark Henry's wing. Guys like that. Just like learn from them. Learn about the business. Listen to Charlotte. See how that goes. I think that's the best place. And if she's trying to be the top female performer in the world, it's not going to happen in AEW. It's not going to happen.
Well, and also WWE's got a couple of holes now in that women's roster with Becky Lynch on her maternity leave. And you have to assume that there's a few months after she gives birth. So she could be out for 18 months or so at least. Probably. And then Charlotte Flair is also on the shelf right now, and there's even talk about her interest in TV on her behalf.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she's at an age where, and her and Becky Lynch both. I mean, they're both at in the case of Charlotte Flair, interest in TV. Hey, if there's TV production people interested in you, you better strike while the iron's hot. The Rock found out that can be a lucrative path as well. So those two faces of your women's division. Going, you know, at least being on the shelf for some time, or, you know, being unavailable to you for some time, all of a sudden you insert a Tessa Blanchard into that mix, season her a little bit at NXT, like you said there, Josh, and get her ready for main roster, whatever that is now, because NXT is effectively main roster. They got their own TV show every week.
Yeah, 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours to the broadcast network now, yeah. But season her just a little bit at NXT, get her used to the WWE audience, get the WWE audience used to her, and then she could be the face of your division for the next year, help you bridge to whatever happens next with Charlotte and Becky Lynch as well.
Probably, yeah. You mentioned those both of those talents. Yeah, Charlotte Flair's tied to several TV deals, possibly an ESPN deal. ESPN Radio is something I'm hearing about her. They really like her, or maybe like one of those simulcast kind of a shows, like the Golic, Mike Golic, his show in the morning. It's on TV and radio. I've read stuff about that from her. But also just in general, acting and modeling and that kind of stuff. And she's also, from social media posts I've seen, that she's definitely trying to push the modeling side of her brand. And Becky Lynch, if she comes back, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the earliest would be next summer at the very earliest. But who knows? She's got a kid. Maybe that's what she's wanted. You know, it's like she's very reportedly, like, she's very family oriented and took this opportunity to say, you know what, this is what I'd rather do. I'd rather be a mom than a pro wrestler. So who knows if Becky Lynch is even going to come back? Maybe.
That's a great observation. I mean, you know, at some point, she's already been at the height of the business. The only thing she could do is stay there longer. And yeah, I agree that could be the end. It could be a sign. Let's change gears here and talk more WWE, but let's talk Undertaker. The last couple of weeks, we've gotten the indication, and we have to discuss whether or not this is news or it's Swerve or whatever it is.
It's Swerve.
Undertaker Swerve. Retiring, and Josh has an opinion here, it looks like.
Oh, it's complete. Anyways, man, here's what I think that whole thing. Like, he's tired of being, like, you know, he's been called up several times, especially since his loss to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. And he's been called in for several matches. He did two more matches with Brock Lesnar. Great matches unto themselves. They were fantastic. But, man, he's had some dog babies of matches since then. And I've been worried about the dude. I seriously have been worried about The Undertaker ever since WrestleMania 30. Like, Father Time is undefeated. And it wasn't that he was unprepared for WrestleMania 30. I think his body just couldn't take the punishment of working a match in that style versus Brock Lesnar. And that's the kind of style Undertaker has always worked, man. But he loves that hard-hitting, fast-paced, like, holy crap, this is superhuman type stuff. And even ever since then, his matches have not been on that same level. And he's had some scary, scary moments. Here's my theory. Just going to put it out there. That is going to be a thing where this is just put it out there. Like, Taker is off the card. Taker is not coming back for SummerSlam. He's not coming back for Royal Rumble. He's not coming back for the Survivor Series or anything. Or if they go back to Saudi Arabia, that's just not happening. But 2 weeks out of Mania, come on, man. He's supposed to be retired. That gong hits, it's going to go apeshit. Like, if he comes back, it's going to be one of the biggest things. I honestly think that's what it's all about. He's like, I'm not doing the spot shows. I'm not doing the Saudi Arabia stuff. I'm not doing any of this middle of the year stuff. He's either WrestleMania or bust. Anyway, that's where I see this whole thing going. But I digress. You might have a difference.
Now we're seeing some hints of a Sting Undertaker match, which, of course, I mean, is only about 25 years late, but you can't help that. That's what it is. It would be a nostalgia match. It would not live up to any idea of what our minds tell us it would be. But still, if you were to bring a Sting Undertaker match to WrestleMania next year, our expectations would have to be lowered for actually how it would look. But just the idea of Sting and Undertaker in a match in at WrestleMania, that would be a retirement match. Sting made that brief appearance. He had the two matches. I think it was just two matches. One Seth Rollins and, then, of course, the Triple H match at WrestleMania.
And a few other appearances with bumps and all that stuff. But, like, nothing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he got injured in the Seth Rollins match. Seth Rollins, with that buckle bomb that left him in a bad way. But if you had Sting Undertaker, it wouldn't have to be a great match. 8 or 10 minutes, most of it posing, walking around the ring, looking at each other, do a couple signature moves and move on. And you'd have your WrestleMania moment for both those guys. I mean, Taker's had so many, but Sting, you know, that match that he had with Triple H at WrestleMania, where it was mainly just a prelude to a bunch of run-ins, that was not becoming of what Sting deserved as a WrestleMania send-off. Undertaker would be, though. Even though they're both diminished, beyond diminished as performers, just the idea of those two guys, that would be, if what you're talking about, the scenarios, Josh, I would love it to be a Sting-Undertaker match.
Yeah, and I want to rewind what you talked about, and this is something that's bothered me for years. Sting's WrestleMania match versus Triple H. I thought it was one of the most disrespectful things that WWE has ever done to any performer in history. It would be akin to bringing in. It reminded me of what they did to Dusty Rhodes, coming in and putting on the polka dots. They wanted Sting to look old. They wanted him to look like he wasn't able to go. And at that time, Sting was still able to go. He was just fresh off of a TNA run. They wanted him to look old. They wanted him to look like he couldn't do it. And I think that's the purpose. I understand. You got the DX stuff. You had the NWO stuff. The fans at the time really liked it. It was a moment. But I think that was Vince McMahon trying to put the last dagger in the WWE. I think that was a vengeful, spiteful booking, in my opinion. You know, other people might disagree with it, but that to this day is one of the most that still leaves a really bad taste in my mouth about what they did this day. Going forward, if he worked with Taker, I think Taker would be able to work with Sting in a way where they both looked decent. And if it was some sort of like no rules match, falls count anywhere, or like a casket match or something like that, where, you know, you could do hard hitting stuff, but, you know, you wouldn't have to like throw each other around and jump around and do all the super athletic stuff that, you know, Undertaker typically used to do and Sting typically used to do. That'd be the way to do it. But yeah, I mean, that would be a match. That would just be, and at the end of it, they kind of go out together, kind of a thing. I don't know, man. I would like to see it, but I'm still nervous about WWE booking Sting right now, just because of how that Triple H thing went down.
And I would wonder if he's also leery about that. But of course, a big WrestleMania payday that could be out there. One last big payday could
be. $2 million will make a lot of things happen, buddy.
It'll make me forgive a little bit more, too. Hey, let's talk about the news with Evolve. Now, this is an evolving story, if you want to say. A couple weeks ago, maybe it's longer than that, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Gabe Sapolsky announcing that Evolve was going to be closing down. And now the news is that WWE is finalizing a purchase of that promotion. And I was just looking it up, Josh, while we were talking to see what the latest was on this. I haven't seen if that also means that Gabe Sapolsky will be working with WWE. I'd hope so. With his efforts over the years working with, a lot of Evolve talents have made their way up to WWE. And his role as a developer of talent could be utilized by that company. But this is interesting news. I mean, a company that has hardcore fans' respect now under the aegis of WWE. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer for Gabe Sapolsky and those guys. The company was losing money, apparently, for a long time. They were having to spend a ton of money to keep up with the WWE, what the WWE was expecting of them, the kind of talents that the WWE was expecting them to bring in, you know, the Matt Riddles, the Keith Lees, the Oscars over the years. Those are people that they went to Evolve well before they had a stint with NXT. There's also the thing with Evolve is a massive, massive video library. There's talent there. There's content there that WWE fans have never seen at all. They have no idea who these people are. So there would be that. That's an added value to the WWE network. And then going forward, you know, after COVID, possibly using those rings, using those facilities, is NXT. This has been a theory of mine that NXT is about to become. It's going to be an equal brand, and it'll basically be an even exchange across all three brands within a year. Is my so, but they still need that developmental area, that place they can hide people for a bit, do stuff, that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely, and that's going to be the issue for WWE. So Evolve maybe could fill that role for them. You NXT started as a place for the talents to learn how to work the WWE style. The TV evolved around that. Hey, now you got to work towards the hard camera, you know, work on your promos and get over. But it was hidden on the network. And, you know, now that Vince McMahon and the inner circle there have made it into something that competes head to head with AEW on Wednesday nights. You kind of lose that, because now, you know, obviously they've put some main roster talents on NXT to help flesh that show out. And so that could be, the other part of this is that library, as you talked about, very important. You can see some documentary type things being spun out of that, remember when kind of things and that kind of thing. And plus, the WWE fans who've heard of those guys' underpinnings, those guys' early careers, will be able to see that programming highlighted there. So,
are you getting some FedEx packages over there?
What's that?
You get some FedEx packages?
I got a ring notification. I'm upstairs. The dogs are downstairs.
You're good, man.
Actually, I just see the postman walk down the street. So the postman doesn't usually get that kind of a greeting, but.
That sounds like my house for sure.
Something was being, like, some big box was being delivered here, or something like that. From that perspective,
you're buying all those belts now that WWE has a financing program. That's what's going on. That's what's happening.
No, actually, what it normally is the state of Virginia has relaxed its ABC laws during the economic shutdown, and they can deliver cider and other things straight to your door. So.
Oh, boy. There you go.
You don't even have to leave your house, and they'll deliver the good stuff right to your front door.
Beautiful. Anyway.
And hopefully that rule stays. Right. That's one thing I want to stay after this. speaking out, we've been texting back and forth about this for a couple weeks. I wrote a column about this last week. It's a couple weeks old now. But obviously, this is wrestling's Me Too moment, and it's still continuing. The fallout continues. You know, a number of big names caught up in this. So where do we start talking about the impact of this ongoing movement? I'll let you start, Josh.
Gosh. I think for the WWE, we've seen a little bit of impact on it. I don't think it's going to necessarily be ground shaking there. I say that because WWE has a decent HR program. And they have their own means of investigation into claims and, you know, whatever happens. WWE basically also has released an official statement saying that, you know, they're going to essentially let the legal system make the decision for them. I think that's coming off of the back of several allegations that maybe WWE jumped too quickly to release people on. And they released some guys, and maybe some of those allegations were less incredible, but I think they did it for PR reasons. I think where this particular movement is going to have the greatest impact and benefit to the wrestling world is the independent scene. It's hard being a woman in professional wrestling. Doesn't seem to be a whole lot of, people out there watching your back and making sure that you're safe in those locker rooms. And if you go out and complain about these guys, it's pretty common. If you look, even Will Ospreay is a guy that's being called out, saying that women that made complaints about him, he had them removed from cards and companies. That's not okay. I think this all in all is going to be a benefit for the professional wrestling business. It's going to make people behave better and be aware of what they're doing and how they're treating other people and the things they say and the way that women are generally treated in the wrestling business, which hasn't been good ever. I mean, you can go back to Fabio. Watch the Dark Side of the Ring. This is a decades-old problem, and it's not just men to women. It's women taking advantage of the women, too, and that kind of a thing. So that's just my take on it, man. I know it's super heavy, but that's just kind of how I'm looking at the situation right now.
You know, my perspective on this is a little nuanced. There's a lot of similarities, but, you know, you think back to the 70s, 80s, there weren't as many women in wrestling. You know, the way cards were booked for the longest time, and this is into the 2000s, I think, you know, you had the women were a novelty match. You know, you had a little person's match. If you were booking an independent card, you'd have a star match, you'd have a women's match, you'd have a little person's match, a tag team match, and then you'd have whatever else you had. Women were just there to be there. The performers may be good. They may just be women who know a couple of moves and look good in the outfit. But there weren't – now, you know, now the rosters are pretty comparable in size. I mean, not 50-50 yet, but there are a lot more women who are legitimate performers. And as a result, they're on the road with everyone else. I mean, it's a mix that's different than it was in the 80s. You know, you mentioned the Fabulous Moolah. She supplied the women's wrestlers for a lot of those cards where there was one match on the card. And even though she was exploiting those women, as we learned from the Dark Side of the Ring, if they were being treated bad by any of the guys in the locker room or at the venue on those cards, they would tell Moolah and Moolah would tell the promoter, and then those guys would maybe deal with repercussions afterwards. Now that it's, you know, now that women are mainstream performers, they're not just secondary, they're just not an attraction kind of thing. It's something now. And of course, the women that make it to the WWE and AEW level have to start somewhere. They start on the indies. And the indies are, you know, you mentioned WWE has an HR department. I'm sure AEW as a big company has its own HR rules and regulations and people to report to and that kind of thing. We know because Sammy Guevara got caught up in this for statements he made on a podcast when he was a no-name 4 years ago.
That's a little – his situation is a little different. Sammy Guevara was just being belligerent and just – the things he said were bad. If he didn't have so much of an upside, the dude would have been fired for the things he said.
I'll say this. He said things that were stupid. Trying to be jokey, and it was a stupid, terrible joke, but he didn't physically abuse anybody. He didn't take advantage of anybody sexually gratifying way. He was just a dick. But he was so on a podcast when Sammy Guevara was nobody. And it took 4 years for somebody to dig through podcast archives and find some stupid comment he made. And to his credit and to Sasha Banks' credit even more, they had a phone call conversation. He apologized. She apparently accepted. She has made statements since. She works for a different company. She could have easily exploited this situation to take out a star on the other company and did not do so.
And AEW seemed to wait for her response as well. And I think that's wise.
Well, AEW, of course, what they're doing is, you know, now they're doing the PR thing, which is, we're making him go to sensitivity training, and we're giving his salary. He's suspended with no salary. We're donating his salary to a women's group.
Wow.
Those are all PR things. I mean, they're real things, but they're also PR things. So we know that they're taking it seriously. WWE takes it seriously, but the indies, I mean, I was an indie promoter. I promoted shows and I was not affiliated with anybody. So that made me an indie promoter, and what indie promoters do, I mean, because I don't know that I call, I mean, some people lump in Impact and Ring of Honor as indies. They're not indies, they're companies.
Companies, yeah.
Indie
promoters. If you get a TV deal, man, you're a company.
Yeah, and if you have.
I would consider Ring of Honor, Impact, Major League Wrestling, NWA Power. I would consider those the mid-majors of professional wrestling. They're different. They have distribution, but they're not indies. They have homes. They have venues that they go to, and they have rosters that are tied to them directly. Anyways, that's just a wrestling nerd thing. But truly, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Our guys, like I was when I was our company was called. Well, we did business as Awesome Wrestling Entertainment, but the name of the LLC was Top Rope Promotions LLC. And but we just booked shows. We would hire. It was show to show. I mean, we had some guys we worked with regularly. But honestly, they were Ohio Valley Wrestling guys that we knew that we had worked with in previous years. So,
that's a great level of talent to draw from, man.
They were our regular guys, and then we would hire, we would put a big name at the top or a couple of big names at the top,
sure.
And then those guys would be the workers. You know, our Jamin Olavencias and Rob Terry's and Michael Hayes guys, they would be our. And I'm trying to think who else. Muhammad Ali, we called him Muhammad Akbar in our.
Oh, country. Yeah.
Those
he's
guys
in MLW now.
Valley Wrestling a lot. Yeah, they work with us a good bit.
Muhammad Akbar. He's got a big deal going. He might actually be the MLW champion with Contra.
I'll have to look that up. I haven't looked at MLW in a few weeks. So
he's been there for a while. But anyways.
He's been there for a while. What I'll say is, I mean, he was great to work with and a really smart guy too. And Michael Hayes, all those guys are great to work with. But we indie guys, I mean, you booked your shows from show to show and you didn't have regular shows. You would book a show in April. Hey, you want to do one in September or October? Sure, we'll do one in September or October.
Yeah, man.
Getting it back to the speaking out. I mean, when you're that level of show, yeah, the you can see where that's so wide open. I mean, that's just hit or miss. That's one off kind of working, and the spots on those shows are important. I mean, when you're hiring people for a couple hundred dollars a night, that means they need that work. I mean, they're working day jobs. They're trying to keep their career going. They're working Friday and Saturday nights. They're driving a long way to work for a couple hundred bucks just to be on a show. They would work our shows, honestly, because they knew that we would have a Kevin Nash or a Shawn Michaels or Rock and Roll Express or Diamond Dallas Page at the top. And who knows? You know, if I work this show and one of those guys peeks out, you know, and sees me wrestling and they talk with me afterwards, maybe they'll tell Triple H and I'll get to go to WWE. So they would work for us for a couple hundred bucks just for the chance to be around those guys, and maybe that would lead to something. Well, that's where exploitation can happen. I'm not saying it happened on our shows. I don't think it did. But that's where it can happen, because those people are so desperate to get to the next level that, you know, and you're driving long distances. Those Ohio Valley wrestling guys drove 10 hours one way to come to our shows to work for a couple hundred bucks. So that's where having seen this speaking out movement come out, I can see where at the indie level this could be an issue because so many people are trying to break into the business. There are so few of those jobs at the mid majors and at the top. Everybody's trying to get there, and it can be hard to do so.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, the world is the way it is and people are the way they are. Sex is a big part of life. It just is. And it's been a big part of business for as long as there's been business or people. That's just the way it is. I guess where I see the upside of what's happening, and I will say I could go down the list of individual cases and say, yeah, I think this is a BS claim. Okay, this is probably legit. But that's me. I wasn't there. You weren't there. Nobody else was there besides the people in those situations. What I'm trying to say is I think it's better for the business in general that this is happening. I think that it holds people accountable. I think that it changes the tenor of the backstage area, and it lets people know that they can be held accountable, and wrestling fans will care if you get called out for doing something as despicable as some of these claims are. That's where I'll leave it. I think it's a good thing for the business, and we can move on.
I'll say I think it's great for the business too, and I think the best part of it is that now that it's out there, more women, if things happen, continue to happen or happen to people for the first time in the future, they won't let it slide or feel pressure to let it slide like maybe women have for all these years. And obviously the spasm of news that came out clearly showed that there were a lot of people who had stories to tell that didn't feel like they could, that one moment allow them to do so. And hopefully that can clean things up on.
You know what? It's amazing also that a lot of the people that had, and maybe it's just circumstantial, a lot of the people that had claims come out against them were WWE talents. Now, a lot of those guys that had things come out against them that were pretty believable in my estimation were not top guys. These were cruiserweight guys. These were NXT UK guys. I'll just leave it at that. I would say more than likely the stuff is true. And what I said earlier is that, yes, I think this is better for the business. People need to keep it in the pants and behave when they're in the locker rooms.
Yeah, well, and on the road, I mean, there's so much, the locker rooms, the road, the hotels, and also just the politics of it all. But wrestling, you know, I've worked in politics, actual politics, if I think the whole world's politics to a degree, but
Sure.
There are more politics in wrestling than there are in politics.
Wrestling, oh my God, wrestling is high school meets Washington, D.C., that's exactly what it is.
And then
you got a shit ton of testosterone thrown in there too. So,
well, you have that and people trying for the ones we worked with, they were guys who used to be at the top and they were still getting big paychecks to put the name on the marquee at a high school show. And then there are the others who want to be there one day and they're all booking themselves. They're all trying to get to the top of the card. And, and then, as you mentioned, I mean, the injection of sex, which is everywhere. I mean, that as a power play itself. I mean, yeah, it's a combustible atmosphere, certainly. There are days I miss the business, and there are days that I don't. And this is the politics of it is what I don't miss, certainly.
Well, let me direct the conversation for a second, if you don't mind. Sure. We mentioned that you are a former indie promoter. You have experience with top names. You have experience with guys coming up, guys and gals coming up in the business and that kind of thing. And we are, of course, still in the COVID era, and we probably will be for another 9 months. Let's just be honest.
From a live event standpoint, certainly, yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Like, so we talked about indie wrestling for a bit. We talked about the mid majors. I have my opinion on who's going to survive and who's not. But where do you see indie wrestling going forward, and how does indie wrestling progress? Without a TV presence or without, you know, a regular presence in towns across the country?
I would say, I mean, you know, with COVID as the backdrop right now, I know, like, so right now would be a time of year when we were booking shows regularly, we would only do a couple of big shows a year. It's other people had different approaches. I think you work with a group that has more regular shows than that, certainly. Instead of doing a monthly show or something like that, we would just try to do two big shows a year, one in the spring and one in the fall. So we're in July now. We would already be working towards the fall for a show. And so we would not be doing the show this fall, I can tell you. Not from the standpoint of, even if the public health situation would be cleared by then, you know, when you're thinking now, July, we would do a show in mid-October every year. We would do a mid-April and a mid-October. You're already hiring people now. You've already probably got your people under contract now for your mid-October show.
We're looking out till December, actually.
So. Well, I'm just saying, if I were doing my normal shows, you're in Georgia, the weather's not an issue really any time of the year. I can't imagine. In Virginia, December can be iffy. You can book a big show in December, spend a lot of money on it, and it might snow, and then all of a sudden you lose all your money. October is a good time. People are back in school. Schedules are set, etc. October for us was our money time in the fall. So we would already – we're 3 months out from that. We would have already had everybody hired for that if that was the case. You're starting your advertising. You're starting ticket sales and that kind of thing. So we would be looking now to April of next year for our comeback show. So, so you're saying you're looking at the company you're working with, looking at December, and that can make sense too, because again, people think that shows just pop up. They don't just pop up. You work months out to get to your show. Because you have to get people, you have to get your people lined up. You have to get the venue lined up. You've got to get your advertising lined up. There's all the stuff that goes behind the scenes. So you
There's also the element of your regulars and then your irregulars. So for, when you're looking at July, this next show that's coming up, it's going to be the July show is actually all regulars just because of the way the schedule lined up. There's a chance that a couple of them could show up just for unadvertised matches, if you will. But, when you're looking out to October, September, that area, yeah, you've got to. Because in the fall, that's a major time for professional wrestling. It's a huge time for professional wrestling for moving around the country and putting on shows, outdoor shows, fairs. That's a big thing. And most states have their county fairs, and a lot of states have pro wrestling as a huge draw for their state fairs and county fairs.
Definitely, your county fairs or state fairs. When we put on shows, we had interest from fairs that would reach out to us to say, "Can you put a show on here?" And one of the promoters I worked with actually, we gave those shows over to that side, but they would put small shows on at fairs. And yeah, that's and those are not going to happen this year. So that's a kick in the shins of the indie business, not having that aspect this year and not having the fall to look forward to this year because,
or indoors either. Like, the company that I work with and kind of, I know the guy that a little bit, yeah, anyway, Southern Violence and Wrestling, they have the benefit of working outside at a brewery. You can't really get any more perfect than that. Like, you just can't. As far as indie wrestling, it's better than anything. And honestly, if the WWE could do that, they would probably jump on it. Or somebody should suggest it to Triple H. But you need to put shows on a brewery, man, because this is going to draw some stuff. Like, this is going to get your numbers regardless. But yeah, that's the benefit of this particular company. So that gives them the levity of being able to go out and book August, September, October, November, December here in Georgia. Weather might be a thing, but they can also roll up the doors. Anyways, that's just where we're at right now. So if go on with the general point you were trying to make there, I think you're getting somewhere.
Yeah, which is that for indie companies, yours obviously is the company you're working with is putting on shows, but there's also the aspect of the fans in whether they want to come to a show. They want to, but do they plunk the money down? Because the media coverage is still pretty, it is what it is. It's trying to scare you into staying at home all the time. So
it is for sure.
So if you're I don't care what some of the state reporting is what it is, but also we're seeing that the numbers are trending much more positively overall. Even as that continues. Human nature tells you if you've been scared for 4 or 5 months, you're not going to just one day flip the switch and I'm going to go back and sit in the crowd next elbow to elbow with a bunch of people. Exactly. That's going to take some time. So I would be leery for that too. Even if Anthony Fauci had a press conference tomorrow and said, you know what, it's over, we're done, go back out and have fun. People wouldn't do that. It would take time, So
any intelligent person would be like, dude, whatever, man. Yesterday, this was a pandemic. No. But like,
intelligent or what? You're going to be scared because you've been scared. And you're going to let someone else stick their head out there and get it chopped off before you get your head chopped off. You know what I mean?
That's international politics right there, buddy.
Yeah.
Now I get what you're saying, dude. I've thought about it myself. And I know that, I think outdoor venues will be the thing. I think people are going to be buying big ass tents and putting fans inside these big ass tents. And that's where you're going to be having all of your wrestling. That's going to be it for the next year. That's going to be indie wrestling, no matter what, however you want to slice it.
Which means states like yours will have the advantage because you have better weather for most of the year than we do. And Virginia is technically a southern state, but weather-wise.
Well, I mean, the winters, I live there. I've seen it myself, man. You'll go from 60 degrees on a Wednesday, and then you're standing in 2 feet of snow on Saturday.
Yeah.
So I've been there. I've been there, buddy.
But you know that. Yeah. So I don't disagree. And I will say this. I'm a news person. I mean, my day job is news editor of Augusta Free Press, right? Well, I have the Greenway in our town is not far from where I live. And I run and bike it every day. And I hate to admit, as the news editor, I don't know what this is. But there's all of a sudden yesterday, a big tent popped up in the park that I'd ride by. There's chairs and there's fans, as you mentioned. It's not going to be an indie wrestling show, I don't think, but it'd be a perfect venue for one. But
well, here's what you do: you just go out there and you make your own ring, and then you like call the wrestlers, and be like, "Hey, man, I got a venue."
I gotta call George South up real quick. High Spots, they used to set our rings up for us, and George South and his crew can come up, and we can maybe use that too.
I am making headway. I am looking into that wrestling ring. It's pricey, but I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. That's some inside wrestling talk there, but wrestling rings can be it's one of those things. People don't know you think you just put a show on. They just, the fan. And I was a fan who did the same thing until I got in the business. You just think, oh yeah, the ring's there. Somebody brought it, right? No, so you got to either own one or rent one. And if you own one, then you got to store it.
Yeah, like it's super expensive, and like even me, like I'm pretty blessed to have just a local insight to pro wrestling. I've developed friends that are pro wrestlers, and they are promoters, so I get other information and I get other insights and how this all works out in other ways that maybe I didn't connect the dots on earlier.
State athletic commissions, wrestling licenses, your promoter's license, I don't know how Georgia is. Virginia is a pretty draconian state in terms of all the paperwork you got to fill out and have on file. I think maybe it was on this show or maybe it was on another show where I talked wrestling with another podcaster where I was once a licensed wrestler in Virginia because one of the angles we worked. Yeah, I'll put that on my back when I die, right?
You need to start wearing just a championship belt around. I was once a professional wrestler.
We worked at an angle for one of our shows where I was going to get physical. I mean, basically, it was I was going to have to punch a guy.
Okay.
If you touch somebody in a ring in anger or whatever, you have to have a wrestler's license. It's only like $40. It's not like it's a big deal, but you have to have it. And so, yeah, I had to have
in Georgia, wrestling is viewed as an entertainment thing. So there's very few regulations and laws on live performance art in Georgia. Surprisingly, as backwards as we are in many areas, live performances are not one of those areas that you have to worry about.
It should be. We do marketing. We've done marketing for years for a theater here in Waynesboro. It's like a half mile behind me here. And wrestling is theater, and this is theater. They don't have to go through the regulations that wrestling does. As a guy who's politically connected, I have made this point to several members of our General Assembly, fallen on deaf ears. They treat us like we're boxing in UFC. And
this is some really deep pro wrestling history, and this ties back to the time when Hulk Hogan sued the WWF.
Yeah.
When that happened and you started hearing about steroids, you started hearing about the injuries that were happening inside the ring, okay? Vince McMahon looked at this and was like, man, we've got to make some serious changes in this business. So the WWE at that point, they created a parent company, which was an entertainment company called Titan Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Very important. And then they rebranded the entire company as Sports Entertainment, with a wrestling name as a gimmick. Yeah. So there you go, people. If you want to look it up, you can.
Yeah.
I knew I'm right on that.
Early 1990s. Anyway, I was like 1992 or 1993. And part of this as well, it was a steroid scandal, but also it was Vince McMahon trying to avoid having to pay these fees to all these states. Hey, if I can save a few bucks, you know, and we'll tell
a few bucks.
Well,
it was per talent, per talent.
I know. I'm being facetious when I say a few bucks, because we had to write big checks out every time we did a show. You wrote the first thing you did, because you had to write in Virginia. They have to get their money within 48 hours of the end of your show, or you could be fined.
Exactly. And if you're working in New Jersey, you're working in areas of Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is one of those states where, like, depending where you are in the state, the laws are vastly different. But the state athletic commissions, man, if you are viewed as any sort of an athlete, not athletic company, athlete, even the NFL, to this day, the NFL gets treated like this, per athlete, not company. You get charged per person.
Oh, and like, people knew what athletes have to do with their tax dollars too. They have to file state income taxes in every state they play in.
For the Super Bowl, a lot of players lose money.
Because of the taxes. Yeah. So and so people don't think about this. I mean, we're just telling you that the business of wrestling. There are things I miss about wrestling, which is I miss the day of the show. When you go into a venue and then you see the ring being built and you see the chairs being put up. You're in the locker room with the guys and gals, and you're going over that night's show, and you're saying who's going over, and you work with them on the finishes, and then you peek your head out and you watch it, and you see the fans streaming up and all that stuff, and people enjoying it, and when you have a great angle and it goes over, that I miss. That's like walking on air, but stuff that gets you there. Having to deal with the state athletic commission, and some of the wrestlers you have to deal with, having to convince them to go with your finishes, having to convince them to go with.
You're talking about Scott Steiner, right? He's Scott Steiner.
Kevin Nash, actually.
Oh yeah. Well, of course. Yeah.
One day I have a treasure trove of email communications that one day will make a great book.
Here's the thing. I will invite you now. I am trying to launch my own podcast series, kind of a thing going on. So that might be a good place to hide your dirt. So in case you don't want everybody to hear what you have to say.
And then it would go viral, and then which of course you wanted to, right? So that stuff I don't miss, but man, there is something about it, what gets you back. I mean, we would do a show, like I said, we would do two big shows a year, usually April and October. And at the end of each show, you'd say, man, I'm done with this. I'm never going to do this again. Mm-hmm. About a week later, you'd say, all right.
Man, I love pro wrestling.
One more time. Let's do another one. Let's do another one in a few months, right? Okay, we'll do one. Yeah. And so, man, it is so addictive. It can be. And, you know, you catch me at the right moment, and I might get back into it. But, no, my wife won't let me, so that's a good thing.
I was going to hit you up for money on starting a new promotion. So I guess that's a good thing.
If I can be a silent partner, but I'm not very silent, unfortunately, as far as that goes. And then the wife, I'll have to do it under a pseudonym, so the wife doesn't know. Who are you talking on the phone again? No, I'm just having an affair. I'm not doing wrestling. She'd probably prefer that to the wrestling. On that note, let's maybe wrap up our show. This has been a good show. This has been fun. We talked some inside wrestling. We talked some
goober.
Josh, as always, thanks, man.
Hey, dude. Thank you so much for having me back. Love you, man.